Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning. So glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold here in studio. And I am absolutely thrilled that you can join me here this morning, if even for a minute. When I think about being delayed for a minute, which is what happens from time to time, especially when you're using Apple and you're downloading something and it says less than a minute, and then it takes way more than a minute, like sometimes it's 5 minutes. So even if you can join me today for a minute or less, we're glad you're with us. And I want to start today with something out of Proverbs chapter 31, verse 10. It says, a wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and called her blessedness. Her husband also, and he praises her. That's Proverbs 31, verse 10. And we want to honor our moms. We're going to do that in the end of the second hour. And if you have a tribute to your dear mother, we'd love for you to call in. And that number is 1-877-933-2484. And you can go live on the air if you like. We also have some books if you want to get in a drawing to get one of these books. We're going to give them away if you want to be brave enough to call and give a tribute to your mom. Or else you can certainly type a message to me, Bill, at myfaithradio.com, and we will try to do that as well. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chris Martin, the millennial evangelical, and I believe he is graduating today from seminary. How cool is that? He's been a frequent guest, and he's getting his MDiv today, so he's walking across the stage at some point, hopefully during the interview. That would bring the ratings of the show way up if during this interview, he's getting his diploma. That's what I'm hoping for. Anyway, we'll take a short break. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. All right, it's 8 minutes after the hour. Glad you're with us. Chris Martin is graduating from seminary today, and he is our first guest this morning. We refer to him often as the millennial evangelical. Chris, congratulations.
Hey, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, did you go get a store-bought haircut, or did you just get out the Flowbee and do it yourself for graduation?
I actually didn't get a haircut of any kind, which I was actually thinking about that last night. I think the graduation cap would fit a little bit better had I gotten a haircut because my hair is getting a little long.
Yeah,
I know the problem. I figured it wasn't really worth it because, you got that cap on the whole time.
Yeah, so what's the point, Why waste $11 on a perfectly good haircut, right?
Exactly. It's just going to get all messed up anyway.
Thank you. But anyway, congratulations, and this is a nice little achievement, and what are your future plans with your little new MDiv?
Yeah, sure. So, I'm graduating from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, which is out of Wake Forest, North Carolina, with an MDiv, and my plans, really, I don't have any plans on changing what I'm doing anytime soon.
Okay.
When I first started the degree, I knew the Lord had called me to ministry, and really, growing up, the only idea I really had of ministry was pastoral ministry in the local church. Working for an organization like Lifeway, like I do now, wasn't even really on my radar. I mean, growing up, I didn't even really know what Lifeway was.
Mm-hmm.
Once I started working for Lifeway, I was like, oh, there are other ways to do ministry other than, just being a pastor in the local church, though that's obviously great. And so I really like what I'm doing at Lifeway. I think the degree will really help me in my work there. But I also would love to have some sort of, maybe unpaid but official pastoral role at my local church while working at Lifeway. A lot of guys at Lifeway kind of do that, help out in their local church in a sort of official pastoral capacity. But
nice.
But don't work there full time or anything. So I would really like to do something like that. But at some point the Lord may call me to full time pastoral ministry, and then I'll be equipped to do that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the plan for now.
Did you notice I didn't interrupt you once, like Lester Holt?
Yeah, I did notice.
Yeah, see, I'm very polite about that. Anyway, congratulations. Any word that you'd like to give to your mother as we're kind of pointing towards Mother's Day on Sunday? Yeah, I want to say something to Mom.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would like to thank Mom for everything. She helped me through every earlier level of school and equipped me to conquer this level of school. But my mom's awesome. I know I'm pretty sure she's listening. She usually is. This is earlier than normal, but I'm pretty sure she's listening, and she'll be watching me graduate online later today. And so thank you, Mom, for everything. You're the best.
Yeah, awesome. And what is her first name?
Her name's Catherine.
Catherine, you did a great job, by the way. Catherine, if you are listening. We love that son of yours. He's a real good guy. All right, let's talk about some of the 9 facts about the political views of millennial evangelicals. This is very interesting. I want to know more about this, Chris.
Yeah, it's a really – so the data is from the Pew Research Center, which is awesome when it comes to this kind of stuff. It's the same data that I've talked about on this show a lot and have written about a lot from the 2014 Religious Landscape Study that kind of tracked how religious views changed from 2007 to 2014. But the data, being a couple years old, is nonetheless relevant. And Pew kind of repackaged it earlier this week or late last week in a new post, kind of compounding all of these different political views of not just millennials and not just evangelicals, but of millennial evangelicals particularly.
Wow.
And when I saw them post that, I was like, man, they either know and wrote this for me, or this is just a great little thing. So I was like, I can't avoid writing about this. So here are just a few. I won't read all of them,
okay,
but a few of the interesting ones. So 42 millennial evangelicals self-identify as conservative, 42%, not
okay.
42 of 65%.
That's more than 42.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. 65% say abortion should be legal in all or most cases.
Did you say legal or illegal?
Illegal.
Illegal. Okay, good.
So 65, yep.
You.
49% oppose same-sex marriage, which might seem low.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about this yesterday with someone else, and I think part of the reason for that is a lot of millennial evangelicals see sexual ethics as a moral issue, not a government issue. Now,
okay,
to their older brothers and sisters, that might seem like, well, wait, how can you separate the two? And I think what a lot of younger evangelicals think is, well, by making same-sex marriage illegal, you're not going to change anyone's sexual ethic. So by preventing same-sex couples from getting married, you're not going to prevent them from committing, like, from having some homosexual activity that's sin. So I think a lot of the reason that millennials, because that number seems really low to me, 49% mm-hmm. of evangelicals oppose same-sex marriage. It seems like evangelicals have always been outspokenly opposed to same-sex marriage. And I don't think millennials are like capitulating on sexual ethic in general, though I think a number of them are.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more of a, we're not going to fight this at the governmental level, but we're going to maybe fight this more at the kind of they would oppose it being accepted by their churches, but not necessarily by the United States government.
Okay.
And they kind of separate those two. Another one that's interesting, 55% of millennial evangelicals say stricter environmental laws are worth the cost.
Hmm.
So you know, if a pastor gets up in the pulpit and says something to the effect of global warming is a hoax or something like that,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to go over well with millennials,
mm-hmm.
Because they're interested in protecting the environment. So those are just a few of the, I thought, interesting stats coming out of it. The general trajectory is that millennial evangelicals are a little bit more liberal politically than older evangelicals, but definitely still more conservative politically than their millennial non-evangelical peers.
Yeah, they probably would get upset, though, if the pastor recycled a sermon.
Yeah. They recycle everything but that. Yeah.
Right. All right, Chris, Mr. Graduate Boy, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk more about this because this is a good topic. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. We love you. Minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here talking to Chris Martin, our millennial evangelical who is walking across the stage getting his degree today from Southeastern Baptist Seminary. So congratulations once again, Chris. Now, the millennial evangelicals do say that they want kind of less government, and they sort of believe that government aid to the poor does more harm than good.
Yeah. Yeah. Only 41% of millennial evangelicals say that bigger government and more services are preferable, which it makes sense. I mean, they tend to be that aligns with the ones who are conservative. The percentage is almost the same. And 50% of millennial evangelicals say that government aid to the poor does more harm than good. Now, everyone knows that government aid to the poor and aiding the poor through government programs, it's complicated. You know, it's not – there's a – with any government program comes a lot of red tape and a lot of forms and a lot of structure and things like that that may or may not be effective. We've seen it be both in the past. That number seems pretty high, but I guess for considering the percentage of millennial evangelicals who identify as Republican, it makes sense because it's about the same percentage. Now, what's really interesting about that is 38% of all millennials believe that government aid to the poor does more harm than good. That's really high for a generation of people, 50% of whom identify as Republican or identify as Democrat or leaning Democrat, is really interesting that 38% of all millennials believe the government aid to the poor does more harm than good. Mm-hmm. But I think the other side of that is approximately 50% are going to say that it does more good than harm, or something to that effect, the opposite side of this question. And I think a lot of the reason that millennials would support, for instance, there is this point, the point that we were just talking about, that 41% say bigger government and more services are preferable. That may seem high to some people who are like, wait, these are evangelicals. Shouldn't they be saying that smaller government is preferable rather than bigger government? And I think a lot of that goes back to the millennial kind of desire to do social justice.
Yes.
And you know, in the early 20th century, the church kind of had this division, even still in a lot of ways, about, well, we gotta do social justice, and, you know, maybe let's not do that gospel stuff because maybe they won't let us help them then. And then there's the other side that says, well, let's preach the gospel and not worry about that social justice stuff because we're all going to die anyway.
Mm-hmm.
and unfortunately, these things have been pitted against each other for so long that I think a lot of evangelicals grew up in churches that don't care about social justice. And maybe they say they care, but they're not doing a lot about it. They're not doing a lot of work in their community. They may do, you know, international mission stuff, but they're not going to go help the homeless in their community or things like that because they're afraid of sliding into that dirty, quote unquote, social gospel space.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So because of that, I think that may fuel a little bit of why evangelicals look to the government to do more services and helping the poor and other social justice issues, because they're like, well, my church doesn't do it very well, or they don't really seem to care. All they seem to care is about spreading the gospel, which is a noble effort, obviously. But maybe then I need to turn to, you know, I can't really help the homeless on a big scale myself. You know, I could give them a meal card or something like that. But maybe I need to turn to this government service to help them, to help the poor that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be, I think some of the ways we can get millennials not relying on the government to do social justice work and relying on the church more is kind of knocking down that dividing wall where we said you either have to do social justice and kind of leave the gospel aside just in case you offend people, or only preach the gospel and not do social justice. You know, we kind of need to get rid of those two sides and realize that preaching the gospel and doing social justice at the same time is preferable.
Okay, Chris, across the board, how do millennial evangelicals compare to their mainstream peers on the subject of social justice? I would say that those two must be neck and neck.
Yeah, yeah. I think millennials in general, whether they're evangelicals or non-evangelicals or non-Christians, period, the entire generation is very activist-oriented. We've been called the activist generation. I think, thankfully, a lot of evangelicals do see the church as a viable and most effective means of doing social justice in their churches or social justice in their communities. But I think overall, there are all kinds of stats that can measure social justice interest. But it's an activist generation. I mean, if you look at some of the most prominent social justice movements, not evangelical movements, but movements in America in the last few years, the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, and other movements such as these, they were largely led by or comprised of millennials. Now, if you think about it, young people are always jazzed up about some cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back when Vietnam was going on, a lot of young people were the ones kind of taking the charge, leading the cause against Vietnam and things like that. So a lot of this might just have to do with the fact that millennials are young and they're very cause oriented. you know, I was talking to someone about this data the other day, like I said, and I think millennials will get more conservative as they get older. Everybody tends to get more conservative as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say if you're 18, what's the line? 18 and you're not a liberal, you don't have a heart. And if you're 25 or 30 and you're not conservative, you don't have a brain. I think that's the line.
Yeah. Yes,
I think people tend to get more conservative as they get older because their priorities change. People are politically self-interested. So as you get older, conservative values tend to line up with older people, and therefore you're self-interested and you become more conservative. But I do think millennials will continue, even into their older age, will be more liberal than maybe generations that came before them.
Mm-hmm. So you think the millennials today, in the next decade, if we're going to look into the crystal ball, would say, yeah, they're going to be even more conservative and put the gospel into practice in a bigger way and maybe do less social justice? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they'll get more conservatives, millennial evangelicals and millennials in general.
Mm-hmm.
Just I think age leads to more conservatism. I think they'll tend to get more conservative. I don't know that we'll ever look at millennials, even when they're the age boomers are today. You know, I don't know that millennials will be seen as conservative when they're 65.
Mm-hmm.
I think the internet has made everyone a little bit more liberal because it's exposed us to more ideas and things like that. But I do think that millennials will get a little bit more conservative, and evangelicals in particular will start to look more like their older evangelical brothers and sisters.
Well, Chris, I think the Brookings Institute came out with a recommendation for millennials to have a nice, successful life, and that was do three simple things. Complete high school, don't become a parent until you're married, and maintain a steady job, and you'll be on your way to a nice middle-class life.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But I don't know if many millennials are going to take that advice.
I don't think they are, but I'm just saying that seems like pretty sound advice, and it's biblical as well. Anyway, Congratulations on your graduation today. Do you know Bruce Ashford over there at the seminary?
Yeah. We're good friends.
Oh, now you're name dropping.
No, we are. I do work with him through Lifeway. We are really good friends. I hung out with him yesterday.
No, Bruce is a regular guest on the show. We just love him. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
and he's the provo there, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the provost. He's overall academics.
Yeah, Mr. Provo Boy. So I love that guy. So we tell him, if you see him, that we love him here at Faith Radio.
I will.
And we
will
love you, too.
Do that.
And thanks for the tribute to Catherine, your mom. We're delighted that you were able to squeak that in. And congratulations on graduating. We're so proud of you. I would grab your cheek and shake it if I could right now, but I can't.
Well, thanks so much, guys. It's been so fun being with you, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Yep. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Half past the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold with you today. We're going to take a little news break. And then when we come back, we're going to continue what really has turned out to be a week-long conversation with Alex McFarland. We're going to talk about encountering people who are either skeptical or hostile to the gospel and how we deal with those beloved people who might be lost, who are lost, and they need to come to faith. And we need to do it gently and lovingly. And Alex is going to weigh in on that, so we'll do that with him in just a minute. Good morning. We all have a purpose and a calling on our life. Pastor Lee Cummings explains what it means to be in that calling.
You were created for so much more. God has hardwired your soul and your spirit and designed you intricately. Before you ever took your first breath, God placed you where he placed you, as he placed you. You're here for a mission, and nothing else is ever going to satisfy. It might numb, it might anesthetize for a moment, but you will never truly feel alive until you know God and you are making him known, and you are standing square in the middle of his will for your life. And I'll tell you what, God's will never be far from lost people. So when you're tempted to try and dull the pain with some more social media, watching another movie, pursuit of other things that this world says will satisfy. Let me just tell you, that's all junk food. The only thing that will satisfy you, Jesus called it, my bread is to do the will of my Father. That's what you were created for.
I hope he wasn't talking about Stanley Cup hockey, watching that being junk food, because I'm going to be junking food this weekend then. I'll tell you, if you want to hear that entire interview, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and type in Lessons Jonah, and you'll get it. Next up, Alex McFarland, one of our faves. Be back in a minute.
Ordinary men and women have faced death to preserve the gospel for you and me. This is Jim Garlow. The recent deaths in churches in the Middle East underscore the courage of those now and over the centuries willing to stand firm for the Christian faith. Many a social movement has burned brightly only to fade and grow cold. But Christians would not recant. Christians were filled with confidence that God had raised Jesus from the dead. And on the basis of that reality, men, women, and children have faced torture, wild beasts, and flames. Persecution and the threat of death can never squelch God's promises to His people. His grace to the righteous and unrighteous, and the accomplishment of His ultimate will. The faithful testimony of these Christians perpetuated the faith through many centuries, all the way to you and me. Because of their steadfastness, we have the gospel. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Minutes until the top of the hour. Good morning, Bill Arnold here with you. This week we've been kind of been doing an excursus, which is a word I know because I took Latin in high school, and it's the derivative is Latin, excur, which means to talk about, to flesh out. And 4 years of Latin, I hope to one day go to Latin America so a guy can use my language skills, hopefully one day. But there's no better person to weigh in on this topic than Alex McFarland, because we're talking about encountering people who are either skeptical or hostile to the gospel. And we're gonna encounter these people forever. And it seems like it's just getting worse and worse. And, Alex, I can't think of anyone who's more in that mix than you.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, always.
I do enjoy talking to skeptics about Christianity, the gospel, and the Bible, because, you know, it's almost like skepticism has become this virtue in itself, that it's to be desired not to know answers, but just to question everything. And so, you know, I think there are some effective ways to respond to that, and the church needs to do it.
Well, I want to set the table a little bit here, Alex. Let's just talk about some of the research that Lifeway came out with that have positive remarks about the Bible, which is encouraging, of course. But here are the numbers. 52% call the Bible a good source of morals. 37% say it's helpful, 37% say it's helpful, and 36% say they describe the Bible as true. And only 35% say it's life-changing. So how do you feel about those numbers?
Well, I think a lot of that is reflective of the fact that many skeptics don't really know what the message of the Bible is. Yeah, it's been my privilege to interview a lot of well-known professed atheists and skeptics, and hundreds of just, you know, average people. But I mean, twice personally sat down and interviewed Christopher Hitchens, people like Michael Shermer, David Silverman of American Atheist. Tried to interview Richard Dawkins, but he emailed me and said he doesn't interact with flat earthers, as if believing in God is commensurate with believing the earth is flat. But interviewed, you know, Bart Ehrman of Misquoting Jesus, dozens of high-profile atheists and hundreds of people struggling with skepticism. And let me say this: as a Christian, there's a lot we know, but there is mystery in the Christian faith. I mean, I don't. Two words that are worth unpacking: one is comprehend, and one is apprehend. We can comprehend God. We can know truth about God. We can definitely know Jesus rose from the dead, literally, and Christ is the Savior. But, you know, I don't fully understand the Trinity. Nobody ever does in this life. And I'm not so sure we'll completely apprehend everything about the nature of God in the next life. But there are things that we can justifiably know certitude. You know, 1 John 5:13 says, "These things were written that you may know that you have eternal life," and that we can know. But I was on a call-in show about 3 days ago, and a guy called in, and he said, "I was a Christian," this is what the caller said, "but I'm a skeptic, and we should always be skeptical about everything." It's
That's what he said. I said, really? You know, should we be skeptical about the assumption that we should always be skeptical? I mean, so let me say what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that you can't have questions and you can't, you know, thoroughly critique and examine. But there is a time in life about important things, the eternal things, that it is absolutely justifiable to make a decision and to find a landing point. And in fact, just stubborn skepticism in the face of compelling evidence is what I think is unjustified.
All right, Alex, if you, these comments are, I have so many more questions. If you were placed in a room with a skeptic or a hostile, who would you rather talk to?
A skeptic or a hostile person? Well, my gut feeling is to say, you know, I'd be happy to dialogue with either one.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody is really actually trying to find truth. But in a way, I would almost, if I had to be pressed for a decision, I would rather talk to a person who's hostile. Because let me just say that it's hip and it's cool and it's chic to be a skeptic. It's like, hey, man, who can know anything? In a way, the skeptics are at best intellectually lazy and maybe even just, their default position is this cop-out. I'm just going to be a skeptic because here's the thing. Just this, to have your default position as, unblemished skepticism, is really, I mean, that's a position that requires nothing, promises nothing. You don't have to do anything. The person who's hostile, even Christ said, I'd rather you be hot or cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're lukewarm, blah, nauseous. The skeptic is that lukewarm person whose passions can't be stirred to really take a stand on much of anything except the fact that they'll never take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants that? Boring.
Yeah.
So I guess I would rather talk to the hostile person. And, you know, people like Mikey Weinstein, we've got a little dialogue going. I'm going to fly down to Albuquerque and have lunch with him this summer. And he's a fairly hostile guy. But, you know, David Silverman, Mikey Weinstein, I've debated them both, very hostile. But you can at least start a conversation. A skeptic is... I mean, a person that is a methodological, unmovable skeptic, it reminds me of that old poem, you know, breathes there a man so dead that he never within himself has said, this is my land, my country. You know, plant your flag somewhere, people. You know, be on or off, but just to sit there in the gray and say, well, the answer is there's no answer. I know that nobody can know. That's intellectual immaturity lived out. And what's so sad is that we're in a culture where people really don't have convictions about anything except that you can't have convictions.
Right.
And that's an artless, bland, dead country. I pray for God to again ignite a soul and a spirit in this country that, yes, you know, here I stand. I believe in God and country, family, patriotism. I have a set of convictions, and I would lay down my life for those convictions. A skeptic wouldn't lay down his life for anything.
You know, Alex, I've had friends that have kind of said they've gone the intellectual, scientific route with me, saying, you know, I'm just maybe a little too smart to buy into this. And I usually say to them, you know, in my 20s, I would have not had an answer, but because I didn't know a lot of smart people in my 20s. But now at my age, I know a lot of smart people, and you're not one of them. Because
yeah.
I think you're right. I think it is intellectual laziness if they don't dig in.
Yeah, I mean, it's been my privilege in writing books and speaking and, you know, serving the Lord through academia. It's been my privilege to meet PhDs in every discipline you can think of. And I know biologists, I know department heads at secular universities, PhDs, biology, chemistry, mathematics, English, physics, astrophysics, forensic pathology, history, my goodness, biblical history, Semitic history, Western history. I know PhDs in all of these disciplines that are degreed people who love Jesus Christ, who understand their own disciplines and are at least conversant on other disciplines. And maybe 40 years ago, when apologetics was a little more in its infancy, people could get a little bit of traction and say, well, you know, it's intellectually untenable to believe in God or Christianity. No more. Oh, my goodness. Apologetics is just, well, it's one of the two fastest-growing segments of publishing, at least in Christian publishing, the $4 billion a year Christian publishing industry. The two fastest-growing segments are Hispanic resources and worldview and apologetics. And the evidence is compelling. Just this week, the Smithsonian published a piece on the excavation of what they're fairly certain is the Tower of Babel. Well, there was a time when people mocked and said that was just a myth. And so many things of archaeology, you know, extra-biblical references to King David and Solomon's horse stables, and so many of the things that have been hotly contested by skeptics, many of the historical linchpins on which skeptics have stood for, you know, a century and a half, well, archaeology has proven that the Bible was accurate on these things, and the Bible is accurate on Jesus. But when a skeptic says something like, well, I only believe, you know, what science can show me, you know, I'm an empiricist. Well, you know, you can't empirically prove that empiricism is the only test for truth. You can't see electricity, but we believe in electricity. Can't see the wind, but we definitely see the effects of the wind. So we live in a time when the pop level, you know, the guy who sits at Starbucks and reads Infinite Jest can talk about how, you know, he's taken the intellectual high road and he's a, you know, only believes in science. But we need to say, okay, you know, specifically what branch of the sciences, because there are the sciences.
Right.
And each one has its own playbook. So specifically, which discovery or which branch of the sciences do you believe has disproven God? But you can't just blanket say science.
Right.
What is that? That's some amorphous trump card they love to play, but it really does not obtain.
Yeah. Alex, when we return, I want Coach McFarland to help us and encourage us how to engage in conversation and help people who are hostile and skeptical. Be back in just a minute. Minutes till the top of the hour. Good morning. Talking to Dr. Alex McFarland. He's a theologian, an apologist, and an author. And Alex, I was just having this little happy thought right before I came back on with you, and that was, in eternity, might God be revealing parts of himself to us throughout all of eternity? So it's like, you're not going to believe what I learned today in heaven.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. You know, the Bible talks about in the ages to come, we'll know more about his grace. That's in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 7, that in the ages to come, he might show the exceeding riches of his grace in his kindness toward us through Christ Jesus. It will take eternity to experience God. And I feel like that this is probably a very poor illustration, but my wife and I had the privilege of raising a niece and nephew, helping raise a niece and nephew that lived with us when they were children, and we took my nephew Benjamin to this amusement park, and there were a couple of coin-operated little rides, like a little merry-go-round, outside the gate, because the line to get in the gate was really long. And so he wanted to ride this little merry-go-round, and we let him while we're waiting in line to get tickets to get into Carowinds Amusement Park down in the Carolinas. Anyway, we got to the gate, and we could go in, And he kind of had a little bit of a tantrum, like, no, I want to stay on the little coin-operated hobby horse. I said, Benjamin, come on, man. On the other side of that fence, there are, you know, 15 roller coasters. And he said, no, no. He didn't know that the little coin-operated horse outside the gate was cool, but if he would trust me and let go of that and walk through that gate, there were 200 acres of rides and the biggest amusement park you've ever seen. I mean, we are the little child clinging to the coin-operated merry-go-round when really God says, if you'll trust me one day, I'm going to give you the whole park, you know?
Yeah.
Heaven is going to be more than we could ever dream.
Mm-hmm.
But I know before the break you were talking about talking to skeptics. Let me encourage people, as our society has become more and more unchurched and de-churched, I kind of have a little bit of impatience with those who kind of like skepticism is a fad, you know, like Frisbees or something. But I do want to encourage people something that God called me to do, and that's to make friends with those that are struggling, because oftentimes the road to unbelief begins with pain. Virtually all of the atheists and agnostics that I've interviewed for my books have been people that at one time did profess Christ or went to church, and there was something painful. And emotional skepticism very often is the road to, or begins with pain. Pain is due to, you know, a loved one that died and God didn't come through. We prayed and this loved one passed away anyway. Or we were in church and it was, you know, some toxic faith experience. So what I would say is, in your own personal time, you know, commune with God, read his word, pray, then equip yourself. You know, read Josh McDowell, read Ravi Zacharias, read Lee Strobel, you know, and I've written a few books myself that you might want to Google on Amazon. But then ask questions, listen, be a friend. Ask questions about, you know, where are you? You know, and there's got to be trust, honesty, respect. So ask questions, listen intently, and be a friend. Now, be a friend who happens to know God's word plus some good apologetics. It's almost like this. Nowadays, as we've become less and less Christian, the pre-conversion ramp-up time is longer than it's ever been. And, you know, we apologetics types, we want to do this data dump. And you're a skeptic. Oh, my goodness, let me give you 20 reasons God exists. Well, there will come a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like 70% relationship building. Just, in fact, I've had atheists who've said, you know, we've been to lunch all these times, and it's fun. You're a great friend, but, you know, you haven't pounced on me. I'm like, no. You know, I'm going to be your friend whether you come to Christ or not. I want you to come to Christ, but, you know, you're my friend whether you ever do or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's this tipping point where the Spirit of God works and you can share all this great info you've learned by reading, you know, Mark Middleberg and C.S. Lewis and Norm Geisler. But ask questions, listen, be a friend. And the Spirit of God will give you the opportunity to sow the seeds and maybe even lead your skeptical friend to Christ.
So in other words, you know, set up a coffee and then make sure you bring your ears with you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well said, brother.
Yeah.
Maybe even have a study group in your house. I mean, we've done that.
Oh, no.
My
that's
wife
not
and I.
Happen.
Several,
not
yeah.
my house.
Not your house. Well, somebody out there who
someone
is evangelistic minded. No, I know. What we have is a great opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is a great opportunity. Say, Alex, just as we're parting, I don't know if your mother is still with us or not, but any little tribute to her, whether she's with the Lord or still on this earth?
Oh, I had a great mom. She went to be with Jesus 2 years ago. Godly mom. Taught me to read at about age 5, and yes, I thank God for my mother. Hey, this Sunday, thank the Lord for the mom you had. or thank the Lord for the mom you've got, Mother's Day. What a blessed people we are.
Yeah, indeed. Have a great week. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Hey, thank you, my brother. God bless you.
God bless you, Alex. 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Couple minutes before the top of the hour. So glad you're with us today. Thanks for listening. Thank you for supporting Faith Radio. That's just makes us so happy. We just love you. We love you, period. We love you for listening. We love you for supporting it. And we just hope that we're putting a little more life in your day this morning. That's what I hope to do anyway. We'll take a short break. We got lots more coming up in hour two.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.